Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. We start this hour with a check-in on the trial of WikiLeaks leaker Bradley Manning and the ongoing hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay. Two stories playing out right now that represent how messy the Obama administration's attempts to fight and prosecute terrorism can be. Will Manning get a fair trial? Should Guantanamo detainees continue to be force-fed even during the fasting month of Ramadan as they protest their lack of trial? Arun Rath, reporter for PBS's Frontline and PRI's The World, has been watching both stories, and he's a former producer of On the Media. Hi, Arun. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian.
So we invited you on because we know you've reported on both these stories, and in our minds, they're sort of linked because, one, they have to do with prosecuting national security issues, and it's so hard to get reliable information on both of these situations, this military tribunal and Gitmo, obviously. Do you see them as linked before we go down each path?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think there's an overlap there. I mean, at least in the general sense, and that's the reason why I'm covering both of these, is that they're both military proceedings. The military commissions in Guantanamo, they're largely based on the code of military justice, so there's a lot of similarities between that and a court-martial. More broadly, though, you know, I think there's a connection in that they're both sort of reflecting a certain hangover that the Obama administration is having to deal with coming from the previous administration, from the Bush administration. Both with, you know, Guantanamo, obviously a situation that he inherited and is now having to deal with and trying to live up to his promises to close the place. But Private Manning also, you know, the reason he leaked these documents initially, going by his own words, is that you know, he was upset by a lot of the stuff that had happened, you know, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, also in Guantanamo. But these were things that had happened that were pretty much history as far as the Obama administration goes. So they're having to deal with the reaction to these issues in a way that's sort of interesting and connected.
So let's talk about the Manning trial. He has pleaded guilty to 10 out of 22 charges against him. And in essence, he's admitted to being the source of the documents that made their way to WikiLeaks. So is the open question whether he was aiding the enemy?
That's really what it boils down to. I mean, the trial has never really been, the court-martial has never really been, you know, did he do it? Because he came out of the gate admitting that he leaked the vast majority of the documents that are in question. There's a bit of detail about the timeline when he leaked and how he leaked, which is a bit more academic. The main question, again, is this: the severity of the charges. His defense says that this did not rise to the level of aiding the enemy, which is the most serious charge, which could result in life in a military prison for him if he's convicted.
And I read that the judge ruled out any defense testimony about Manning's motives, but is allowing testimony about his state of mind at the time. What's the difference?
Well, this has to do with, you know, the prosecution is trying to establish that Manning was more wanton in how he let these documents out, both that he knew he had it in his mind that they could get to al-Qaeda, you know, to our enemy via WikiLeaks, which is, you know, a sort of a stretch of an argument that a lot of people have a lot of problems with because it could implicate news organizations if you're going to use that logic. But he's also what they're arguing in his defense is that he was not indiscriminate in the documents that he leaked in the way that it's being portrayed, that he was leaking these things for a specific end, and that end was not to aid the enemy, was not to damage U.S. forces. It was specifically to generate a debate in this country about these things that he thought were wrong that he was seeing when he was doing his intelligence work.
It's the exact same debate we were having last hour on the show with respect to Edward Snowden.
Yeah.
And from what I can tell, the way this argument is playing out in Manning's case is they need to determine whether WikiLeaks is considered a news organization or something else. Is that important to the outcome?
Yeah, well, it's fascinating because in the day before the defense rested, it was kind of remarkable, something that I didn't ever really expect to see in a court-martial, a real debate going on about journalism and about the nature of journalism in the digital age. The defense called Professor Yochai Benkler, who has famously written about reporting in the internet age and WikiLeaks. And through him, you know, he basically launched a really vigorous debate, a vigorous defense of WikiLeaks as a journalist or as a journalistic organization, and said that they're part of journalism in this new age. They're part of actually not just that; they're part of a tradition of muckraking journalism, of activist-style journalism that was trying to make a difference. And you know, he made a very strong and compelling argument rooted, you know, in his deep intellectual work. About why WikiLeaks was absolutely a legitimate journalistic organization, and that was there presented for the court and for the judge.
Yeah, we have part of that quote from that witness for the defense. Quote, "It's a clear, distinct component of what in the history of journalism we see as high points, where journalists are able to come in and say, here's a system operating in a way that is obscure to the public, and now we're able to shine the light. That's what WikiLeaks showed how to do for the networked public sphere." And then he continues a minute later, "WikiLeaks played a critical role of that particular critical component of what muckraking and investigative journalism has always done." So that's a defense expert arguing that WikiLeaks does what news organizations do, sometimes at their best, and therefore that plays into whether Bradley Manning is a spy or a whistleblower.
Yeah, and it's wild, Brian, because I can't imagine a military judge ever thought, Judge Denise Lynn, that she ever was going to be trying to weigh issues even remotely like this. It's not the sort of thing you usually come across in a military court.
So since Manning was one of the first people ever to supply documents to WikiLeaks, how much of a known quantity were they even at that point when he gave them this information? Did they present themselves to him as a journalistic venture? Maybe the court is going to have to figure that out, too.
Well, it's one thing. The prosecution initially said that they were going to demonstrate, they were going to show through evidence that there was a close coordination between WikiLeaks and Bradley Manning, that he was basically following orders from them, that he was going along, that he even had direct contact with Julian Assange. What was wild, though, Brian, is that they didn't show any of that in the end. They laid this all out in the opening argument. They promised it, and they just didn't deliver for reasons that, are kind of a mystery. But they didn't show direct communication between Julian Assange and Bradley Manning, and didn't even show, they said that they were going to show how Bradley Manning was looking at WikiLeaks websites to try to figure out what they wanted. They couldn't even establish that he'd visited these URLs. It was kind of thin on that point.
Huh. And yet I read that there was a Defense Department document introduced which lists Assange as WikiLeaks, quote, foreign staff writer, which the defense is arguing portrays him as a journalist in a journalistic organization, and that's the Defense Department's own characterization.
Yeah, and there's a lot of ways in which, you know, the Defense Department has called the WikiLeaks a lot of different things and referred to them a lot of different ways. So if they get into that discussion, one of the things the defense threw back at them, which was a bit of an irony, was that one of the reasons why Al-Qaeda was interested in what WikiLeaks was showing was because the Defense Department was interested in what WikiLeaks was showing. It was sort of like a circular argument that they were going there because Al-Qaeda thought that they were interested, that the Defense Department was nervous about it, basically.
Arun Rath with us from PBS's Frontline and PRI's The World as we talk about the Bradley Manning trial. And we'll move on in a minute to the hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay. And before we do move on, this is a military tribunal, not a civilian court. I think it's important that we remind listeners of that. So how different is that turning out to be for the way that justice is administered in this case?
Well, it's, you know, there's a lot of similarities with civilian justice. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting is that the judge, and this is not a lot of people have talked about this, the judge has pretty much absolute latitude in terms of sentencing, meaning that even if Bradley Manning is found guilty on all counts, the judge could decide to find him guilty and say that and not sentence him with anything, basically let him go free. So assuming that obviously he's pleaded guilty to these counts we talked about, that he probably maybe found guilty on others, the sentencing phase of the trial is going to be very interesting because given that latitude the judge has, we're going to hear an awful lot more about what was going on in Bradley Manning's head and, the justifications for this.
And listeners, we can take your calls about either of these situations, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show, And I see that we have Stuart in Manhattan calling in, who says he attended the Manning trial last week. Stuart, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I was there about a week ago for a day. And on the day I was there, the prosecution was arguing. Their main argument was that what Bradley Manning did by releasing a lot of these embarrassing revelations helped recruit for Al-Qaeda. It was an interesting argument because it wasn't that our actions helped recruit for Al-Qaeda, but it was his letting us know about our actions. So it can kind of give the lie to these things should be top secret because they let the enemy know what we're doing. It's more like for propaganda purposes.
Stuart, I'm just curious, what was your role? Were you part of a support group bearing witness?
I just happened to be visiting somebody in Maryland, and I'm on an email network for Bradley Manning. And they asked people to come down and watch the trial, so I did.
Stuart, thank you very much. And Arun, that's interesting. Is there a lot of that? People can just do that? You can sit in the gallery as a spectator, like at a criminal case?
Yeah, it's worth mentioning because anybody, you know, you have a right as a citizen to go and see this. And they've made some adjustments over the last couple of months after a lot of complaints about access to the trial to make it more accessible. There's even a whole giant spillover room, which is basically a theater on Fort Meade where they can accommodate, I think, up to a couple hundred people to see it. So the public, interestingly, I also mentioned about Guantanamo, the public can go to Fort Meade as well. And if they want, there is a closed circuit feed of the trial from Guantanamo. There are a couple of places where people can go and actually check these things out. It's not easy. You have to go there in person, but they are accessible.
If you want to see the Zimmerman trial, all you need to do is turn on CNN or Fox News Channel or MSNBC. It's a little harder to watch military tribunals in process. What's the trial going on at Guantanamo?
Right now, there are a couple of military commissions in place. One is for one of the people who was accused in the bombing of the USS Cole. But the big trial going on, the big commission, is for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four of his co-defendants who were basically the plotters of the 9/11 attacks. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is widely described as the architect and embraces that that title himself of the 9/11 attacks.
All right. Also at Guantanamo Bay, a hunger strike continues, as does force feeding of inmates to keep them alive. On Monday, a judge blocked a bid to halt the force feeding during Ramadan, when, of course, people fast, but they don't fast 24 hours a day. Yesterday, Senators Dianne Feinstein and Dick Durbin sent a letter to the Obama administration asking them to reevaluate their procedures, though they stopped short of calling for an end to the force feeding. So what's the status of all this?
Well, right now there are still over 100. There are 106 of the inmates there that are still on hunger strike, and about 40 of them, I think the latest was about 45, are being force-fed, what they call tube-fed or enteral feeding. And there are three, I think, that are in the hospital right now. Those numbers have stayed the same for about the last week, although the numbers have grown sort of bit by bit over the course of the strike, which first started around February. And there have been a couple of developments. One is that President Obama has named a new envoy, a lawyer, to work on closing the center and work on transferring detainees. So there's been some movement on that because the office of closing involving closing Guantanamo, the State Department, has had nobody running it for the last few months. So there's a little bit of movement on that. But in terms of moving people out or the hunger strike actually ending, I don't see either of those, much movement on those anytime in the immediate future.
Well, we took a call from somebody who visited the Manning trial. I think Rita in the East Village is calling to say she was recently at Guantanamo. Rita, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Brian. Yeah, my brother died on September 11th, and because I'm what is called a family member in a lottery of family members, I was chosen to come to Guantanamo and spend 8 days there.
I really appreciate
and
you calling.
And I think your audience needs to know why these over 100 men are on a hunger strike. They are not the men who are accused of the 9/11 event. They are other men. 56 of them have been cleared of all charges. Many, if not most of them, are from Yemen, and because we have no relationship with Yemen, they argue back and forth over where to send these men. The United States will not send them back to Yemen. Other countries don't want them. Meanwhile, the men for years have been in jail without any charges leveled against them. The other men are being held in what is called indefinite detention, which means none of them have ever been charged of anything. These men are desperate, and the only thing they know to do is to be on a hunger strike.
I'm so glad.
The medical is,
Rita, let me ask you a question, and I'm so glad you called, and I appreciate, you know, you calling in, considering that you're a family member of a 9/11 victim, and so
and I'm
interesting.
I'm a member of September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. And, I'm a founding member.
Uh-huh. And on this, and I'm glad that you laid out what is really the underlying issue for these men at Guantanamo Bay, but it's gotten bound up with a lot of media coverage and a lot of anger over the act of force feeding itself. And I wonder if you have an opinion about that, because it's, you know, like, what's the government supposed to do, let the prisoners die? Rita?
What? Yes, I understand your question, Brian, and it's a major question, but it's an either-or question. And what you're asking me is it worse for them to die, or is it worse for them to torture them? The medical profession considers force feeding torture. So you choose. I can't.
Rita, thank you very much for calling in. And Arun, there's, you know, we could talk for the next hour about Rita's phone call alone, but let's talk about a couple of pieces. First, on that choice, the way she portrays it, between torture and letting them die, isn't there a way that somebody who is trying to commit suicide, if they're really trying to commit suicide, by going on a permanent hunger strike, isn't there a way that wouldn't be considered torture to keep them alive since you're ultimately responsible for them as the, since they are ultimately responsible for them as the government?
You know, I'm not medical expert in this, but I don't know if there's a way that, you know, intravenous feeding might be, you know, if there's any way to do something like that, but it is, you know, I'm sure a lot of people have seen that video now of Mostef submitting to the procedure. And I know there's been criticism of that, you know, he's an actor and he might have been putting on his suffering. There have been another video that's come out showing, I think, some young women who are doing it voluntarily, and it's apparently not that bad for them. But it's an intense medical procedure. It's a tube, you know, it's an invasive medical procedure. A tube is being shoved up these men's nose, down their throats. It's not always easy. Sometimes it comes out in the throat, goes down to the lungs. You know, and you have to imagine these men are also not in good condition to start off with. If they're at the point where they're having to be force-fed, they're pretty frail at that stage. So it is a tough one. It is the case that the AMA and other medical organizations have said that they can consider it to be a violation of human rights.
And do they really want to die? Is it clear?
Well, what's clear, Brian, is that these men, you know, underscoring a point that Rita made, is that they're feeling extraordinarily desperate. And again, to reiterate something that she said, is that these are not the men who are largely accused. In fact, the people we were talking about, the 9/11 accused, we know for a fact that they're not on hunger strike. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is actually looking rather well-fed, if anything. These other men, many of whom, as she was saying, have been cleared for release. You know, the incident, the hunger strike, was initiated by a search that was back in February. But everyone agrees, both the guards, you know, from the lawyers, everyone across the board agrees that what it's really about is the frustration these men feel because there's no end in sight for them. A lot of them having been cleared for release and you know, the fact that they don't see any route to getting out of this place.
Susan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Susan.
Hi. The third option, of course, would be to get off all the political stancing and either let these men into the U.S. if there's nothing on them, and to close Guantanamo, either force feeding from the people or letting them die. That's both torture. And the president just doesn't want to do this alone, and I understand that he does have the power to do it. He doesn't want to do it alone, so he doesn't take the political hit, but he really does not not need Congress to do it at this point. And I can understand the frustration of people who see no end in sight to detention. That's what needs to happen, that we really get off the political, hemming and hawing and get Guantanamo closed and get these men out of there.
Susan, thank you. And so to Susan's point, Arun, Senator Feinstein wrote in her letter, we have 86 detainees who are cleared for transfer. They are no threat to this country. They have been adjudged so, and they have no place to go. So this is an expression of acute hopelessness in the forced feeding. In my view, this is inhumane. I'm very concerned about it because it's the wrong thing to do. So what is the Obama administration's actual set of options to do with these men other than hold them indefinitely without trial at Guantanamo Bay if, as Senator Feinstein says, they have been adjudged no threat to this country?
Well, you know, people have pointed out that the Obama administration would seem to have more latitude than it seems like they're acting like they do. There is latitude within the Defense Department to make to authorize transfer of detainees if they reach, you know, certain criteria. And President Obama has not pursued that option. What's also remarkable with the hunger strike, is that we mentioned this, you know, the ruling this week by a U.S. federal judge that she said that she lacks the authority to halt the hunger strike. What was remarkable was that the judge actually said that I'll read from her opinion, quote, that there is an individual who does have the authority to address this issue, clearly referring to President Obama, that he actually, you know, he's the commander in chief. He could directly affect, order an end to the force feedings right now, even though President Obama himself has been a critic of it. So it's really a peculiar question why, you know, President Obama is himself criticizing the force feeding, but not really doing anything directly to stop it.
Well, maybe we should do a separate segment on the show on the question of whether force feeding is torture or is always torture. We're looking up some of this and saw that in 2006, the UN ruled that force feeding was not torture. And in the U.S., we also use force feeding in supermax prisons. Shoe bomber Richard Reed, I gather, was force fed here in the United States. So there is kind of a new debate, similar to the waterboarding debate a few years ago, I guess, as to whether force feeding is torture. So maybe we'll do a separate on that tomorrow or so. But we leave it there with journalist Arun Rath, who maybe you know his work with PBS's Frontline or for PRI's The World. He's been covering both the trial of Bradley Manning and the hunger strike at Guantanamo Bay. Arun, thanks for such good information and good to talk. We used to work together when you were producer of On the Media. It's good to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, we're going to get the latest on the causes of the Asiana plane crash in San Francisco. There keep being these threads of information that suggest that maybe there are some larger issues to talk about, even though this is the only plane crash, commercial jetliner crash in 4 years in the United States. So we'll try to figure out what's there. Stay with us.